Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy is on her way in. She had to deal with the same traffic I did coming in on the Kennedy, or she's here now. And, I mean, honestly, it is so absurd on the Kennedy coming out of the city to the suburbs. It is ridiculous. So
what are they doing?
On the one hand, you have the closed lanes. And then on the other hand, when you have cars get off and they take, you know, basic what turns out to be the frontage road, right, going through Edison Park.
There's more construction there.
Then they have the Harlem exit to get back on after the lane narrowing. They have the Harlem exit closed, too. So then I got to go all the way around on two wheels through the neighborhoods, come back out.
I took the alley, though, and
Come back out on Canfield to Higgins and then back onto Cumberland and back onto the expressway.
But then I ran out of gas, so I had to stop at the Cumberland gas station.
How do you run out of gas?
I know, because I drive a lot of people around. I don't know, and then I look down and the hoopties lights on, and so I had to pull in and get gas. And I smell like gas. Do you smell it?
No.
I spilled it all over my hand. Don't light a match.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, you would be tempted, though.
Lighting it up last night at the Al Smith dinner was Nikki Haley, outgoing U.S. ambassador to the U.N. She's got herself some jokes, or at least some joke writers, just one after the other. Zing, zing, zing.
But I do understand why you invited me. 2 years ago, President Trump was here, and he made some waves with his remarks. Apparently, no one here could have predicted that. So last year you went with Paul Ryan, who's a Boy Scout, and that's fine, but a little boring. So this year you wanted to spice things up again, right? I get it. You wanted an Indian woman, but Elizabeth Warren failed her DNA test.
Hey, there it is.
Actually, when the president found out that I was Indian American, he asked me if I was from the same tribe as Elizabeth Warren.
No, you didn't.
That was good. And it was also good to see that, according to New York Post, de Blasio and Cuomo, those two Sandinistas, were booed. That, first of all, they don't like each other, and apparently nobody likes them
either
individually. They got booed there.
Or as a couple?
Yeah.
Oh.
How about that?
Well, Nikki Haley, then she got a little serious, Dan.
In our toxic political environment, I've heard some people in both parties describe their opponents as enemies or evil.
But enough about Hillary.
In America, our political opponents are not evil.
It was when you went, aw, we were having so much fun, and then she got
serious.
Yeah,
I get it. You have political aspirations, Nikki. You got to make the pro forma statement. I mean,
she looks gorgeous.
I agree with that, but, you know, come on.
This isn't the time. You got to keep it light.
Who doesn't look gorgeous to you? Everybody's gorgeous.
Well, Nikki Haley is stunning, too.
Who did you say? Yes, you said some dude was gorgeous yesterday.
Oh, who was gorgeous yesterday?
I don't know. Everybody's gorgeous to you.
Anybody remember what my hot-o-meter went off on? Who was it?
No, I don't. one of the It Girls of the 2018 cycle, or perhaps the It Girl, along with Beto O'Rourke, they're kind of competing to be the It Girl. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC.
Yeah.
AOC was on Kimmel, saying Nikki Haley at the Al Smith Dinner. You had AOC on Kimmel this week. Again, displaying her dizzying intellect. You talk about somebody that's not holding up very well under positive exposure. These are supposed to be easy.
You beat a 10-time incumbent, a guy who just assumed that he was going to win, and you came out of nowhere. You were working as a bartender and decided that it would be a good idea to run for office. It's really one of the most remarkable stories I've ever heard.
So
do you stop and think about this from time to time and go,
yeah,
I can't believe this is happening?
Yeah.
A year ago?
Oh, yeah. People just lose their mind. They're like, wait, it's like back in the day. When,
yeah.
Like, when people will be like, is this real? And it's like, yeah, no, it's... Yeah,
in the party.
Yeah, they do. And it's, yeah.
In their own hometown.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if it's because we're from the Bronx, it's like exotic to us or something. She was like, yeah, no, my husband is a huge fan of yours. Motion-activated tchotchke behind me that's like singing Jingle Bells actually is, you know, and they're telling me, you know, and, you know, they said, you know, that's right, you're, and... I kind of grew up. yeah. For sure.
And,
it is
in that.
Well, I think me kind of typing into my phone, put it in your cell phone calendar, but also it means
Hello
that
Kitty
we need
diary.
To also have.
Yeah, let's give it up. Obviously, that was a bit of a mashup, but you see a motif. Developing.
Yeah, it sounds like Valley Girls.
Like, oh my God! Valley Girls. Like, totally. Valley Girls. And Cena was like, so bitchin'.
Yeah, I find Valley Girl less annoying, actually, than Ocasio-Cortez. So we've got our it girl right now on the Republican side, Nikki Haley. They've got their it girl. Beto O'Rourke is making a play, but AOC is their it girl. I think I'll take ours.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Are you getting ready for Halloween? Do Peyton and Eli still trick-or-treat?
Yeah, this is one of those years where Peyton is still deciding whether or not to do it. He's 14, going on 15. Gosh, he's going to be 15 years old next month. And definitely Eli's doing it because he's in eighth grade. But he's 13.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Well, it's a problem also, too. You got to make sure that you consult with your local university on what are acceptable Halloween costumes.
Halloween.
Yeah.
Well, there's some
places.
They'll
have a miss about it. DePaul, I'm sure, for the Lakeview area.
Yeah, he always dresses, you know, we make sure it's nothing racy or controversial. Although last
nothing
year I was.
Racy.
Well,
how would a guy be dressing in something racy? That's weird.
I know, it's weird. But
it's a weird way to describe a guy's costume.
Well, some of them, I know that there's racy girls costumes out there, but a lot of boys make fun of the girls and wear the racy girl costumes. It's weird. I know. You don't understand. Your kids aren't there yet.
Right.
Because your hypothetical children, they're still in single digits, right?
They don't trick or treat.
They hand out the candy and
focused on their
and
studies.
Advice. Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
But for Halloween, you know, they've got the remake of Halloween, the movie. And Jamie Lee Curtis is back, even though she's in her mid-80s. There's a good review of it, though. Kyle Smith and National Review Online.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't agree on A Star is Born.
I loved that movie.
I thought it was a bit campy and self-indulgent, even though the music was good and Bradley Cooper was good. Couldn't really warm up to Lady Gaga.
Now, her character or just the fact, could you not see through Lady Gaga?
No,
you
her character.
I mean? Her character?
Yeah. I just thought it was tinny and it was very sort of, you know, there's no vulnerability because, you know, women can't be vulnerable anymore in Hollywood.
Oh, I thought there were some vulnerable moments.
Nah.
And then you see the shift change when she got the power in the relationship.
Well, that's the whole story.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just, but Bradley Cooper to me seemed like there was not a lot there.
Not a lot there. He learned to play guitar and sing for the movie.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
I thought
he did a pretty good job, too.
Oh, he did a great job. I thought that he was raised with piano lessons and all of that.
So even like this Sam Elliott and the Chappelle, the characters, I think they're both good actors. The characters were one-dimensional. I mean, I just think it did not. The music was good.
Amazing.
You know, I'll sing Shallow for you later.
Okay.
We'll do a Shallow duet.
You be Lady Gaga, I be Bradley
Obviously,
Cooper.
Because I have to hit the high notes. I'm off the deep end now. You think you have that kind of range for that transition? No chance. Come on. Other than that, the Mason, Judy Garland. A Star Is Born remake is much better.
Of course you've seen that.
So
I just saw the Barbra Streisand.
That also not great. And also, they also ripped the whole nose thing from Barbra Streisand's version of A Star Is Born.
Oh, this.
You know, right. I can't get a break because I have a big nose. Come on. Anyway, getting back to Halloween.
Oh, yes.
Kyle Smith reviews it in National Review. A right-wing Halloween. Are you scared?
Behind me!
Kyle Smith writes, Halloween is a gung-ho, gun-loving, liberal-trolling, capital-punishment-backing conservative manifesto in the format of a slasher flick. I like it already. It's the kind of movie where if someone said he'd rather have dance lessons than shooting practice, he'll soon be corrected. Written also in part by Danny McBride from Eastbound and Down.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. You know, he's a comedic actor. He says basically that Laurie, the Jamie Curtis character, offers a 200-proof truth. There is no more to the story. There is no lesson to be learned. There is no understanding Michael Myers. He's just evil. It's bracingly no-nonsense, i.e. conservative view of humanity, is what captivated Kyle Smith over at National Review. So now, even if the Rotten Tomatoes score is low, which I think it is, low-ish, I'm going to go see it.
You're going to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. Scary.
It's nice.
I can't go see it.
It's nice to see some underlying conservative thematics and understanding of humanity. And plus, it's a slasher fic, and you know how much I like slasher fics. By the way, speaking of that, Bradley Cooper has come a long way from Midnight Meat Train.
Midnight Meat Train?
Midnight Meat Train. I mean, if you want to see the most disguised, say again, it is not even close. Remember, you're talking to someone who will have like a pork sandwich while watching Saw movies.
Okay.
It does not bother me at all. Midnight Meat Train is disturbing.
And Bradley Cooper was in it.
Yeah.
Was he the villain?
No. He's the star of it.
Okay.
He's the protagonist. But he is, it is the most disgusting movie I've ever seen. Okay. And I've seen just about every disgusting movie.
Let's jump on board the Midnight Meat Train,
so,
shall we?
Do a Midnight Meat Train at home and then go out to the theater and see Halloween. That's what I'm suggesting.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. I'm off the deep end, watch as I dive
in. I'll never meet the ground. Let ladies sing it. Crash the surface.
Pretty good. That's a pretty good duet. But there have been, you know, good duets in movies before. Okay. All right.
I'm Bradley Cooper, I told you. You gotta get your Lady Gaga ready.
I gotta get my Sam Elliott voice that Bradley Cooper mastered.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's worth seeing A Star Is Born. I'm not, you know, giving it a zero. I'm just saying, like, people that are over the moon about it, I think it's, no. All right,
here's a question.
Yeah.
Did you cry at the end of A Star Is Born?
No, I've seen previous iterations of A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
So I had an idea what was going to happen.
Well, we all have an idea, but then her song at the end, her love song to him, did you cry then?
Oh, no. I thought you were talking about,
alert. But you didn't cry then either? And the scene before the final scene?
No, I was out of Milk Duds. I had to go back to the...
Oh my! You were probably the only person in the theater who didn't cry. The only other movie I saw where everybody was openly weeping was Gleason, the documentary
New
Orleans football player New Orleans Saints football player who got ALS. That is by far the best documentary I've ever seen in my life.
It's a great documentary. That's very tough to watch.
That's
very tough to watch.
But it's good, and everybody should see it.
It's great.
I brought my boys, and they were crying. Everybody was crying.
Recently, they featured him again when New Orleans Saints, he was either before a Sunday night or Monday night football game.
Yeah.
They did a piece on Gleason and where he is at with his with battling Lou Gehrig's disease, as well as the work that he's doing to help other ALS, other people suffering from ALS. I mean, it's an incredible story. It's a sad story, but a triumphant story, as so many of these so many stories like that are, but it's, that documentary is something. There's no question. All right, let's talk a little bit of midterm elections. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Which race are you most interested in? Which race are you most focused on at the federal level, at the state level? We'll take your calls and perspectives. Amy, where are you focused?
I'm focused on cinema, because cinema and Martha McSally,
your
Colonel
future
Martha
home state.
McSally, yes, they are literally almost deadlocked in the last two polls. And she went on a radio station yesterday in Phoenix, and
she's the only openly bisexual member of Congress, Kristen Sinema.
Yeah, Congresswoman from Arizona.
Yeah.
Was wearing
not weird
a purple pinkish dress, a short skirt, you know what kind of length of skirt it was, and throws her legs up so everybody can see her sexy yams. And it was so
gams.
It was so wildly inappropriate. I couldn't believe that she's running for U.S. Senate. But that's not it. That's not the worst part. Then she proceeds to open her mouth, and she's distancing herself now from the Democratic Party.
So Representative Sinema, are you a Democrat?
I am.
Proud Democrat?
Gosh, it's hard to say proud. I don't know that, I'm not sure that people are even proud of parties anymore, because I feel like the parties are not doing a good job. So I would say that I'm a proud Arizonan. That's something I'm very proud of. And I'm proud of the work that I have done in Washington, D.C., and the work I've done in the state Senate and the state House before going to Congress. But I'm not particularly proud of the parties.
Because, you know, in your ads, it mostly doesn't. Well, actually, I don't think I've seen a D.
It doesn't.
Is that on purpose?
That's right.
Yeah. I mean,
Is that bad to separate yourself from the party?
No, not necessarily. But the thing is, she's also sort of trying to shore up the problem she created for herself by that McSally has exposed of being critical of Arizonans before, talking about the Tea Party crazies and denigrating people in her state. So now she's wrapping herself in the Arizona flag.
You've got to see this.
And now she's an Arizona jingoist because she got exposed for taking cheap shots at people in power in Arizona previously, people in office, and that, you know, the state was run by conservatives and they're crazies. Now she's trying to round off that edge.
And you should, her handler was standing behind her, and you should have seen her face when she was answering the question, like, what are you doing? Oh no. Oh, God. And then she went like this with her arms.
Yeah.
And walked off.
I think McSally's going to win that race, which is an important hold. And I mean, the qualifications between the two couldn't be more stark. The choice could be more stark. And that's good news, I think, for McSally, even though Arizona's been, trending more competitive of late and will be more competitive this election cycle. But Sinema, I mean, we played excerpts from one of their previous debates. She sounds like one of these lobotomized murderers in that movie Get Out.
Yeah.
I mean, it is so sing-songy, kind of dead in the eyes. So that's one race. Let's go to Tom in Oswego. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hello?
Yeah, hey, Tom.
My name's John.
Oh, hi, John.
All right. Now, John
Good
from
morning,
Oswego.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on.
I went to a dinner in a district meeting last night out here in Oswego, and I tried to ask a question, but they kind of, Mark Batnick didn't really even get close to answering it. I asked him a question. I said, could you give some property tax relief to people that don't have children that go to the school district, like an NCIS or No Child in the System tax exemption for us?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't answer it. And I was wondering, Dan, is that something feasible that they could do?
Well,
for us?
I wouldn't support that. Here's what I'm supporting, and here's what I think is the play, because everybody is getting hammered, whether you have kids in the school system or not. Everybody's house is being liquidated by the government. So what I've proposed, and what Mark Batnick has actually signed on to, and it's one of the reasons he's one of the candidates I'm supporting in my private life as just a political hack, is the 1% hard cap that Indiana has. 1% hard cap as a percentage of home value. So establish a market rate, put the 1% hard cap on it, and it shall not increase your property taxes until you have a capital event, either sell your home or improve it, make an improvement. And I mean, immediately in communities like Oswego, you would see your property tax bills cut by anywhere from a half to two thirds to three quarters. And that's all over Chicago Metro. That's the play. That's the way to put handcuffs on spending at the local level, which you can leverage to put handcuffs on spending at the state level, give people their homes back, and the possibility to get a return on investment on the biggest one most people will make in their lives. That's the play, and that's where Batnick is.
Do you think that could ever actually happen, though?
I do. It's one of those things. Why can things happen in other states? I mean, I'm not describing something that's never been done. I'm describing something that is the policy just east of us. So, of course, it can happen. It has happened. If it can happen in other states, of course, it can happen in Illinois. It's funny here. All we expect is that the worst possible thing can happen. Well, if you get new leadership for this state, some of the best possible things can happen, too. My position with respect to Illinois here, if we're going to talk about Illinois races, just the state in general, either have high expectations for the state or no expectations and get out. But this incremental death march, that's no good. That doesn't work for me. So I'm either going to have super high expectations and we're going to advance profound structural changes like in terms of home values and property taxation in the state and how we fund schools, which is a corresponding issue. Or I'm going to have no expectations and I'm going to plot my exit strategy like everybody else. There's no in between anymore.
Well, then how can you and Dan maybe get together or not? I mean, I'm talking to Dan, I'm sorry, but you and Patrick get together and maybe buy like a town in Indiana so all the Illinois people can move over there?
I'll
follow you. I'm serious. I'd follow you.
I'll work on that, John. Thanks for the call.
I can get your little crop.
What's that?
You can buy yourself a plot of land in Indiana. And
yeah.
Create a main homestead. Street, a homestead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a bank. Signature Bank could be the bank.
Just so you know, I don't know if people know this, Indiana is settled. It is not barren land.
No,
there.
It's up for grabs.
Yeah, it's actually.
Go mark your spot, everybody.
From all indications, seems to be going pretty well there. Robert in Oak Brook.
Guys, don't ask us why, but I've been in Illinois my whole life. I'll probably die in Illinois. Oh. My mom is 85 years old. Her home might be worth $300,000 to $350,000. She pays, and she's 85, senior citizen discount, $16,000 a year in real estate taxes.
$16,000 on a $300,000 house.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's highway robbery.
It's insane. That's 5% of property value. Basically destroy any value for that home. But anyway, I'm sorry, Robert. Go ahead.
Well, no, and here in Oak Brook, where I live, my next door neighbor, he's got to have at least a 6,000 or 7,000 square foot home on about 3 acres, and he pays $16,000.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's the assessor's
tell me, and once you get into the city, it's probably more.
No,
it's
the city's less because commercial subsidizes residential in the city. But here's the thing. Look, this is I don't know how many times. This is everywhere. Go to this website that I put up, saveyourhomenow.org, and just go to the news section, the stories from around the state. And we'll tell these stories in the last 2 weeks and post them online and on social media and all that. And share your story. I mean, people have to understand that everybody is in the same position. This should be the unifying issue for Illinois families that stokes the revolt. It really should be. So I just think sometimes people think this is only happening to me or there's nothing I can do about it. Well,
no.
When it's happening to everybody, then there is something you can do about it.
Great show, guys, always.
Robert, thank you for the call. Mike in Plano.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
I called you a couple days ago to talk about Holker and Roskam, and Dan, you're right. We should try to hold on to those seats.
Yeah.
I'll hold my nose and vote for Randy, and I think he's going to win his district, but I'm worried about Roskam. I just don't see him making it. I mean, he's running against a guy that's very aggressive, and Roskam simply isn't. He's just basically another wimpy Republican. He hasn't really fight or stand up for anything. I mean, he's running against a radical left-winger who's now trying to pose himself as this moderate capitalist Democrat, and I don't see him fighting back aside from TV ads.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to be concerned about Roskam. I think it's a close race. It is a winnable race, but it's close. It's a fight. The same goes for Hultgren, too. It's close. It's a fight. Both are eminently winnable races, but the concern I have, because, you know, Roskam's been through tough races before, and he's come out the other side.
Tammy Duckworth, remember that?
I mean, he works. He works. Sometimes you don't always see it other than what you get in your mailbox or you see on TV or online. But he does work. He's a worker. My concern is turnout.
My,
we're seeing some, you know, drop off from the in terms of enthusiasm after there's been some time. I mean, not that much time, but even just a week of separation from the Kavanaugh confirmation saga. That would be my concern. I mean, Mike, if you want to help, the way that I would suggest you help is by within your social circle, your circle of influence, get people who are like minded out to vote. That's the play. It is a turnout play. The Trump voter has to engage with Trump not on the ballot. Otherwise, you're going to have Republicans like Roskam and Hultgren in a very precarious position as they are now. Thanks for the call, Mike. Appreciate it. John in Palatine.
Hey, Dan and Amy. I live in Palatine, and Tom Morrison is one of our great conservatives with integrity, and his opponent, Maggie Trevor, is coming in as a very progressive liberal from California, and I'm a little bit concerned about that race, and I'm very disappointed with Sam McCann for sending out that bad literature, and I think he's done a big disservice to the party that he is claiming to form, which is the conservative party. So then he goes bad-mouthing a good conservative like Peter Breen and Morrison. I can't believe it.
Yeah, thanks for the call,
and
John.
Sam McCann's going to be on here at 6:36 a.m. You're going to want to listen.
Yeah, we're going to ask Sam about those mailers that attacking conservatives like Tom Morrison, really doing the bidding of Local 150, who's financing the mailing, who is doing the bidding of Mike Madigan. So Sam McCann is living down to the accusation leveled against him by Bruce Rauner that he's just a plant for Madigan with mail like you're describing, John. And by the way, Tom Morrison, Maggie Trevor, completely being financed by Madigan. Tom Morrison, absolutely must have. Tom Morrison, with Jeannie Ives finishing out her term, not running for re-election because she ran the primary, Tom Morrison is the most principled conservative in the General Assembly. There is no conservative reform movement in this state without Tom Morrison. That's how important that race is, and it is close. Judy and Piatone.
Hi. I wanted to chime in on the property taxes and property values.
Yeah.
We bought our property, designed our house, built our house. It appraised in 2006 for $484,000. Now that we're at the age where we want to sell and go into a townhouse, it's appraising for
$250,000. Oh, my gosh. I know.
So we, instead of being able to buy a comfortable townhouse and put money away for another income stream, we're going to have to downsize and buy what we can afford and hope we get by.
Thanks.
And, of course, it's going to be in Indiana.
And it's going to be in Indiana, right. Thanks for the call, Judy. Sorry about that. This is why this is not about dollars and cents. This is about people's lives. If you can't get people exercised about their lives, the entirety of their lives, when you're talking about, you know, six-figure investments that you're making in a house and the life that you're building in a place, it's all being taken away by this political class in Illinois at the state and local level. This is the issue that should inform your votes up and down the ballot in Illinois. To focus on Trump or the nonsense that the Democrats are putting out there against Republican candidates is to say, I don't care about my home and the life I built in this state. There's no two ways about it. Judy's story is one of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands in this state. Every single person. No one is spared.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Is this caravan of Honduran migrants trekking its way through Guatemala to enter the United States, ostensibly? Could this come at, could this have come at a better time for Trump? 312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, Turnkey.pro text line. And I say that, and this is not to be disrespectful to the plight of people trying to make their way out of terrible conditions in Honduras. It's to say, just politically, this puts immigration, border security back on the front burner.
Yep.
2 weeks to go before the election. Yeah. And I think this is why Trump made this so central to his comments yesterday at a rally in Missoula, Montana.
Yeah, there's 4,000 Guatemalans, Hondurans. They're going to be at the Mexican border by daybreak today, Dan, and they should make it here within 2 weeks to the United States.
Although not if Trump has his way, apparently saying at that rally, he is willing to scramble the U.S. military to close the border to prevent this caravan of thousands from entering the country illegally. Do you think that's the right play for the president to make, to suggest he would go so far as to use the U.S. military and deploy them to the border to prevent this caravan from entering the country? 312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, Turnkey.pro text line.
Well, I just think, I mean, them arriving on election week, it's politically motivated and politically orchestrated. I mean, they've had plenty of time.
Wait,
to
what?
Yeah, to come during election week, you know, to show the sad faces at the border. You're not letting me in, you're not helping me. And they're trying to hurt the Republican Party, I think.
Oh, you think this is orchestrated? You think this is an astroturf play by the left?
Oh, gosh, yes. Because there's plenty of time when they could have come to this border and they're going to land or get in or try to at least during election week. If they said either the Sunday or Monday before the election. And what President Trump is trying to do and facing is shutting down the border. And that's why, you know, John Bolton and John Kelly got in a big heated argument yesterday about this.
Allegedly
about this border, you know, blow up, what they should do. And I, you know what, at this point in time, I say shut it down. And that's not normally my loving, giving, bleeding Republican heart, but I'm sick of this. This has got to stop. And what he should do is cut off aid to Honduras and Guatemala if they don't, and to Mexico, if they don't stop this. Like, well, don't let them get to our border.
Well, there's a couple of things. He's presented with a choice, right, at the border, which is to reinstitute family separation or to prevent them from entering the country in the first place so they can be together on the other side of the border. And this is why I think, so there's no evidence that this is orchestrated by the left. And frankly, I think sometimes we give political operations a lot more credit than they deserve for being able to orchestrate things. So, you know, this is an ongoing problem. I mean, there was a story out this week, The Washington Post reporting that more than 16,000 people have been arrested along the U.S. border in just the month of September. Wow. So this is, you know, this is never ending. And frankly, I understand people's empathy. But when he walked back the enforcement of the family separation policy, as we found out at the behest of Melania, at least in part, what does that encourage? It encourages more people to come here and be sort of, you know, go through the process. Don't come to the place where you're supposed to come. Border Patrol's hands are tied and then you're sort of released into the country. That's the play. And so not enforcing the stated policy just encourages more of it. So he has this choice of prevent it or go back to separation and then have the same media stories that we had from several weeks back.
Kids being, you know, torn away from their parents, tears, crying. It's too much. I don't want to relive. We already saw that movie. Well, here's President Trump last night in Montana.
But we are preparing for the military to secure our border between Mexico and the United States. It's something we have to do.
Is that something we have to do?
Well, and I'll tell you, it's interesting. Our friend Steve Cortez had a piece in Real Clear Politics yesterday. Mm-hmm. Vote for Republicans to vote for the border wall in November. I mean, he's essentially arguing that the federal elections should be a referendum on border wall funding, and which is a proxy for border security. Remember, up until Kavanaugh, the issue that most animated Republican voters is immigration and the promises that were made on that topic. And kind of Trump is circling back to this now, and the caravan provides the opportunity. And, of course, this is a complicated topic, and, of course, we need to treat people who are not threats to the peace decently, even if they're trying to enter this country illegally. But there is this duty to protect our border and to have people want to come to this country, follow a process in, even if you ultimately want to reform the process. Everybody has to be treated equally before the law. That's one of those cultural norms that's also a legal standard. Again, 312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro Anseline, if you want to weigh in. Marvin in Gurnee, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I wholeheartedly support this move. It's long overdue. Our military's there to protect our borders and protect our country. And without borders, we have no country. And I wanted to know if you could elaborate. Why is it that the liberals seem wanting to constantly affix citizens of the United States' rights on people who are not citizens?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not citizens. And the other thing that's really got to really be done is the anchor baby thing. Whether they're coming from China to New York at a boutique hospital and having a baby so they can have dual citizenship, or people coming across the border and dropping a child, and now they're all here and we can't get rid of them. That's got to stop.
All right, thanks
for
the call,
Marvin. So you know, the government of Mexico has just dispatched two 727 planes filled with federal police officers to its southern border to try to intercept this caravan.
The Mexican government also said they would provide some kind of a visa to allow these members of the caravan to establish some kind of at least temporary residency in Mexico. Mm. I mean, here's the thing.
But the Mexicans don't want that.
Well, right. That's why they have border security with Guatemala.
Well, they have a border wall. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Huge wall.
So that's something lost on so much of the conversation here. But with respect to what Marvin said about why does the left want this, I mean, you've had people, you've had members of the Democrat Party openly call for people in this country illegally to register to vote. There's a case in Texas most recently. They can't win this electorate, so they need to import a new electorate that they can. It's a big part of it. Mike in Crown Point.
Good morning. Dan, I disagree with you as far as I think George Soros' fingerprints are all over this thing. The amount of financing and logistics and everything else it takes to do something like this, you know, you don't just go to a convenience store, buy a couple of Twinkies, and get on a train and come to America.
No, but you organize. But
this parade's getting, it's like a parade. Have you seen the video of this? This is scary stuff.
Well, there's two things. One is I like evidence. Number two is, again, this is one of these things that happens on a daily basis. We just don't pay attention to it until it becomes, you know, a caravan of 4,000 people. This isn't the first caravan.
No.
And the idea that a bunch of people in a country where they are oppressed and see little opportunity would get together to try to come to America, to make a trek to America that's makeable, is not beyond the realm of possibility. You know, this is sort of how we have, 12 to 20 million people here illegally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand it. But so, I mean, you know, the conspiracy theories, it's just
regardless, you know, they're coming.
Establish some baseline.
Yes, well.
I know the conspiracy theories are for the left. Dan in Libertyville.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I could not be happier with President Trump. What a lot of folks aren't recognizing is not only did he say, we will put the military down there to stop them, he did a great move of getting Mexico involved, saying, look, if you don't want to do commerce with us, okay, by letting those folks in, we shut down the border. How much money is that going to cost you? That leverage was fantastic. What other president has been able to do that? His diplomacy and making Mexico secure their border and vet those people before they get to our border, brilliant.
All right, thanks for the call, Dan. Annie on the north side.
This is an invasion. It's we need the military there. I mean, the politicians are putting illegal immigrants before actual Americans. It's not a race issue. It's not an immigrant issue. It's an illegal immigrant issue, and they're here legally. Illegally, people who have been paying into this pot in the country, veterans, people who've worked their whole lives, politicians are telling Americans, we can't afford to do this, we can't afford to do that, but they find money to send illegals to school, college, medical. This should not be allowed.
Thanks for the call, Annie. David and McCook.
Hey, happy Friday, guys. I've been reading a lot of articles about this caravan. The thing that surprises me is I haven't seen or heard anything about the left with their fake outrage that we can't separate the children.
Yeah, right.
What about these parents are putting their children's lives at risk by this death march? I mean, my gosh, the conditions are walking through what they're trying to accomplish.
But
as a parent, I would never do that to my child.
Well, put yourself in their position, what they're fleeing.
Yeah, that's true too.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, another case where the squeaky cultural Marxist gets the oil, so to speak. Kleenex. After 62 years of its man size tissue brand.
Yes, it could stay strong when wet, remember?
Uh-huh.
Those commercials.
It was aimed at men, right?
Right. Working men out in the field, you know.
Now that men are have been scheduled for obsolescence, they are scrapping man size because some people complained on Twitter that it's sexist.
Well, yeah, they complained on social media about the product's gender marketing because one little tweet came from a lady named Lisa Hancock. She said, my 4-year-old son asked me what was written here. Then he asked, why are they called man size? Can girls, boys, and mummies use them? I said, I don't know. And yes, of course. He suggests you should call them very large tissues. It is 2018. So Kimberly Clark, you know, got down on their knees and decided to change it to extra large.
Choice of phrase. I
just meant they catered to their
the study
growing chorus of opposition to this
study we discussed last week. Uh-huh. 80% of Americans reject communist propaganda, aka political correctness. 80% of Americans reject stuff like this. But corporations bow to the squeaky cultural Marxist, as do other institutions. And they don't hear from people who just roll their eyes when they hear about stories like this. And so the march of the cultural Marxist goes forward. So these stories are funny and silly and ridiculous and dangerous. This is how an insular minority of central planners can take over and subordinate the will of the overwhelming majority. I mean, I don't want to make this is not like the linchpin of the whole argument, but it's just an example because we're just so easy to accept and try, and you know, that's so silly, and I just move on. And then that silliness visits my office. That silliness visits my kid's school in much more deleterious ways. And I shrug that off, too. I become complicit with the emasculated liars. I'm just saying. Now, on the flip side, I have a suggestion.
What? Is it a new name for
man size? Yeah, it's a new name. No, not for this, but a new, and just in the spirit of this.
Yes.
I think in Illinois, after he's inaugurated in January.
You mean Gerber?
Right.
You mean the big guy?
I think we should say, I think fast food restaurants in this state, it's a glandular problem, should be required. If you want to supersize your meal, you say, I want to Pritzkerize it.
Oh,
how about that?
Likey.
Yeah, that's gender neutral as well, because JB is gender neutral.
Right.
As he's made clear.
Speaking of product.
Or here's another way to work in our new political overlord. When you go to the gas station and you want to inquire as to whether they have restroom facilities, do you have a Pritzker?
Oh, can I use your Pritzker?
Yeah, can I use your Pritzker?
Do I need a key to use the Pritzker?
Do you have a key to the Pritzker? Right? What do you think? I mean, it's a versatile term is my point.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
And by the way, other names that you have, politicians' names that we can apply to our everyday life to more integrate their names, their brands, as it were, into our everyday life. We'll take your suggestions. I was just focused on Pritzker.
Okay.
I'm going to run to the Pritzker, and I'll be right back.
You know when they took the Pritzkers out of the Pritzker home? Where did they put the Pritzkers? Like, did they have, you know, like an iPod, like the storage unit where they put all the toilets in?
Where did they put the Pritzkers?
Right, or did they just leave them in the backyard or the side yard?
I think the Pritzker family, I think they went and stayed at the Ohio house until they were allowed to put the Pritzkers back into their mansion. This gets a little confusing when you're talking about the people versus the device.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. See Heather McDonald, James O'Keefe, and Sheriff David Clark at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets at freedomsummitchicago.com.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go to the Pritzker. That was one thing we've come up with in terms of applying these wonderful politicians' brands to our everyday lives to more incorporate our political overlords into our everyday lives. I mean, listen, the least we can do to honor Pritzker for breaking the personal campaign spending record at the state level. He has spent the most money, most personal money of any candidate for statewide office in the history of our country. He just passed Meg Whitman, who ran unsuccessfully for governor of California.
How much money are we talking?
I think he's over $145
million. So, $145 million?
So with that
and
kind of branding.
About the property taxes with his toilets?
Exactly.
What's going to be the return on this investment? He can be in the parade. Oh, he gets a driver now? He already has a driver.
He gets a sash.
Oh, that's right.
So other great political ruling class elites in this state that you would like to use, you know, make their last name more of a household name by applying it to our everyday life, not just knowing them as the permanent office holders, but also your everyday life, like having to use the Pritzker.
Right.
I'll be right back. I got to use the Pritzker. Do you have a key to the Pritzker?
Hey, is the Pritzker clean?
Yeah, clean the Pritzker before you go to school.
Yeah.
Right? The maid came over to clean the Pritzker.
I think we have a crack in the Pritzker. I think the Pritzker needs a new toilet seat.
Pritzker
seat.
Man, that Pritzker is dirty. we're taking your suggestions for others, though, or other incorporations of Pritzker.
Oh, I love this.
Mike on the north side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I'm having a terrible day. I got the news that my health care plan Obamaed out, and I can't afford it. My pension was dailied, and now I can't afford to retire. I came out to go to work this morning, and someone preckwinkled my car.
Hey.
So I had a call for a ride, and the cab driver, I think he's drunk. I don't want him to Ted Kennedy me on the S-curve. And the Uber driver, I think he wants to Barney Frank me in the Forest Preserve. I don't know what to do.
That's a pretty good run there, Mike. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. The Uber driver wants to Barney Frank me in the Forest Preserve. My car got preckwinkled. That means stolen.
Stolen, yeah.
Yeah, not vandalized, no. It's got to be stolen.
Yeah.
My car got preckwinkled.
My pension got dailied. And my Uber driver, I don't want him to Ted Kennedy me on the S-curve.
Drunk, yeah. Pretty good. Bruce in Bloomingdale.
Honey, I just opened up my property tax bill, and boy, did we get mad again.
Got mad again.
Oh!
Yeah, all right, very good. That's good. Thanks, Bruce. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah, first of all, I'm offended by all this scatological humor, but I would offer that you could sell the Big Gulp model, Pritzker.
Yeah, 64-ounce Pritzker. I'll have the 64-ounce Pritzker.
Well, you know, just guaranteed to not do whatever JB probably would if he visited your house.
Yeah, all right. All right, thanks for the call, Ralph. All right, I like those. Thanks for those contributions. We're efforting Sam McCann, so let's take a break. I want to make sure we memorialize all of Mike on the North Side's uses for political names in this state.
I want to get Ted Kennedy on the S-curve.
Or Barney Frank in the Forest Preserve.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and our metaphorical Pritzker is overflowing now with other suggestions. We're branding, using politicians' brands in our everyday life. So Mike from the North Side gave us, my car got preckwinkled.
And my pension was daily.
Jim Ignatowski on Twitter, he wants to, he's got another use for daily. I have to go feed the daily.
Oh, that's awesome.
Parking meter.
Parking meter.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I got to go put more money in the daily. I like it. Let's see. Also, we had Robert, who stayed in the scatological space, but a little twist on it. Excuse me. Excuse me. I have to take a Pritzker and wipe my Ronner. Oh, gosh. Beth gives us, the local schools got rommed, so the kids have to cross gang lines now to go to school.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good use for ROM.
You've been rommed.
Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, how you guys doing? Now, you already kind of said, I was going to say, you go to the Pritzker, take a color tin, and wipe your mat again.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Go to the Pritzker. Take a Madigan and wipe your Colorton?
Yeah.
Or take a Colorton and wipe your Madigan?
Take a Madigan and wipe your Colorton.
All right. Go to the Pritzker, take a Madigan, wipe your Colorton. I like it.
Time to try to eat breakfast.
Yeah. Art in McHenry.
Good morning.
Morning.
Am I? Okay, I am on.
Yeah, you're on.
All right. How much Pritzker's spent and not willing to pay his property taxes should have everybody in Illinois questioning why. What is his intention? You know, and now all of a sudden he wants to spend over $100 million to help Illinois. Are you kidding me? This guy has something going on behind the scenes that we all should be watching.
All right. Thanks for the call, Art.
He's got to feed the ego. He needs a job. As you said, he wants to wear the sash.
He'd like to outfit his mansion with Pritzker's. Yemi on the North Side.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
Morning.
Oh. As soon as my biscuit dried up, I will run out of Illinois. Thank you.
As soon as my, wait, say that again. As soon as my Pritzker what?
Dried up. I will run out of Illinois.
As soon as my Pritzker dried up, I ran out of Illinois. All right. Thanks for the call, Yemi. Steve on in Huntley.
Well, Rick stole my my saying. I was going to use Ronner instead of Colorton, but.
All right.
Great show, guys.
Thank you.
Wonderful stuff. Hey, but yesterday I printed a sample ballot for the upcoming election. And in Kane County, there's a proposition to, shall Kane County oppose the Illinois General Assembly instituting a 1% annual real estate tax?
Right.
I heard nothing about this.
Yeah, there was a Chicago, a proposal that came out of the Chicago Fed that one way to deal with unfunded pension liabilities in this state is a 1% of home value property tax increase for the next 30 years. So on a $250,000 home, that would be a $2,500 property tax increase every year for the next 30 years. In addition to your property taxes increasing at a 45-degree angle, in addition to that. A layered on property tax increase. And, oh, by the way, none of the Democrats, all those suburban Democrats that the suburbanites seem to like who because they're in office, not a one of them has announced their opposition to that. So that should tell you something, too. If you haven't figured this out in Illinois, if a politician is unwilling to oppose a tax increase, that means they support it.
Yep. Right. What can we do to fight this?
Well, obviously, go out and vote.
Republican.
No, you have to get suburban Democrats out of office. Right. You have to you have to send a message that you will hold them accountable for liquidating your home out from underneath you. I mean, honestly, it's just as simple as that. We have a culture problem here, but it starts with the personnel problem. And if you don't change the personnel in the suburbs, then you're not going to have the balance of power that you need against Chicago Democrat crime families. The suburbs, suburban Cook and the Collars are the key. So out your in places like your way, Stephen Huntley. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, have you seen this story about Chow Yun-fat?
Excuse you?
Chow Yun-fat.
Chow Yun-fat?
The great action star.
Oh.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
Replacement Killers with Mira Sorvino, remember?
Yeah, she went missing for a month and a half.
What?
What are you talking? The Chinese actress that went missing?
Mira Sorvino, Paul Sorvino's daughter. Chinese actress? What the?
You said Chow Yun.
Chow Yun-fat, first of all, he's not an actress. He's an actor. Secondly, people know where he is. He's not missing. You don't know who Chow Yun? Crouching Tiger, Dragon. Hidden Dragon. Chow Yun-fat, action star. Look him up and you'll recognize the face.
Chow Yun-fat.
What's wrong with that? Listen to this about that. First of all, he's like a mega, mega star in Hong Kong. But of course, he's crossed over and he's made it in the U.S. too with several good films. His net worth is reportedly over $700 million. That's a lot of money to accumulate for an actor. He's doing something right. But here's the thing.
Yeah, he does look familiar, yes.
He plans to give his entire net worth to charity. What? He's very frugal. He used his first Nokia phone for 17 years, only switching over to a smartphone 2 years ago. Shops at discount stores saying, I don't wear clothes for other people as long as I think it's comfortable and it's good enough for me. He spends his free time hiking and jogging. He's not doing, you know, these kind of splashing out and buying mansions. He spends $102 per month.
That's it?
$102 per month. He's often seen taking public transport, doing charity work. His wife, Jasmine Tan, who
he let her eat?
She's the daughter of a wealthy Singapore businessman.
Okay.
She said her husband plans to donate his entire net worth to various charities. She's happily supportive of his decision. The money's not mine. I'm only keeping it safe for the time being. Fat said his money is not the root of happiness. My dream is to be a happy and normal person. The hardest thing in life is not about how much money you earn, but how to keep a peaceful mindset and live the rest of your life in a simple and carefree manner.
Boring.
So that's some instruction for you since you're going to win the $1 billion lottery.
Well,
I just
right.
thought you should hear the Chow Yun-fat story now that you know who he is.
Well, yeah, I thought you were talking about Fan Bing Bing.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Still more rumor than fact when it comes to the disappearance and apparent murder of Saudi Arabia's Jamal Khashoggi, op-ed writer for the Washington Post, but with deep ties to the Saudi government that go back, well, generations. I mean, his uncle was Adnan Khashoggi, the shady arms dealer from 80s lore, Iran-Contra. President Trump yesterday saying that, this is where it looks like it's going. But as the Secretary of State said, Pompeo, a couple more days for the Saudis to wrap up their investigation and present some heads for consideration.
Jamal Khashoggi is dead. It certainly looks that way to me. It's very sad. It certainly looks that way.
Looks that way that he was murdered.
We're waiting for some investigation and waiting for the results, and we'll have them very soon. And I think we'll be making a statement, a very strong statement. But we're waiting for the results of about three different investigations, so we should be able to get to the bottom. fairly soon.
And then the consequences.
Well, it'll have to be very severe. I mean, it's bad, bad stuff. But we'll see what happens. Okay? Thank you.
So, I mean, it's really just a restatement of the position the president has taken since his sit down with Leslie Stahl over the weekend for 60 Minutes, which is get the facts. Now he's saying it appears that he was murdered. Yeah, okay. Waiting for a couple investigations to be completed. And if the facts bear out what the rumors suggest, then there'll be severe consequences.
And they need to find the body. I mean, right now they're checking the Turkish countryside. One theory is that he was dismembered there and his body parts were taken to different parts of the country.
Yeah. Well, that may never be found, but and also these alleged tapes of his torture and execution.
Yeah, ABC News is saying that Pompeo heard the recordings, and Pompeo is coming out saying, I did not hear of any such recordings, and they should retract that article.
For more on this topic and others, we're pleased to be joined again by Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Chicago time. The author of the book, 3 Days in Moscow, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of the Soviet Empire. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Morning. And so what are, from your understanding, some of the options that the Trump administration may be game planning or considering pending the conclusion of these investigations if they conclude what everybody suspects to be true?
Yeah, I think there are a couple options. The weapon sales and halting that, sanctions, and possibly not dealing with MBS, the Crown Prince, directly. But just to rewind, that story that you just talked about, the ABC story, mm-hmm. flat out says that the Secretary of State heard yep. the audio tapes of the killing and saw a transcript of them.
Right.
The Secretary of State is adamantly saying this morning that he did not. Now, the ABC report cites Turkish officials. Well, there's all kinds of stories that we've seen over the past few days that have been cited by Turkish officials. And frankly, they don't have a great track record when it comes to accuracy in their news media or their storytelling from official.
Well,
and then CNN painted this gruesome picture that they were listening to music. They put their headphones on while they dismembered.
Well, it may all be true. It may be true. But I'm just saying, if there's an example of the Secretary of State definitively saying, no, I did not.
Right.
It's going to be pretty easy to prove him wrong if that's the case. But we haven't seen the tape or we haven't seen the evidence.
Yeah, and I mean, and to your point, Turkish officials, that's a broad category, and who knows how broad it is. And we're talking about Turkish officials from the Erdogan government, not exactly a government that inspires a lot of confidence if you believe in things like a free society, a due process, and, general integrity.
Yeah, they don't have a great track record, not only in human rights, but in telling stories accurately.
Yeah. So again, just in terms of the Trump.
I think sanctions is probably the most. Sanctions is probably the most. It'll be Congress, looking at the Magnitsky Act. It'll be.
Yeah.
I think that's where it'll generate from. But remember, it's three-dimensional chess here. You move one piece in that region, and three other pieces move, and. Saudi has played in this new administration a crucial role in countering Iran and their hegemony in the region.
Well, right, which is why, actually, I give credit to Trump and his team from being measured in a way that a president should be, whereas I think less credit is owed Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio, who jumped at the chance to make news on this issue. But Rubio, calling for the arms deal to be spiked almost immediately. Lindsey Graham suggesting MBS has to go. I mean, what, we're going to engage in regime change in Saudi Arabia? Come on.
Yeah. That doesn't usually work well when lawmakers are calling for regime change of an authoritarian government. They don't usually take the advice.
Yeah, exactly. Wanted to get your take, too, on the caravan of Honduran migrants moving their way through Guatemala into Mexico, ostensibly to the United States. And this sort of, just politically speaking, perhaps couldn't have happened at a better time for Trump and Republicans, because it puts immigration and border security back front and center, and he made that a front and center piece of his rally talk in Missoula, Montana last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's an issue that's a sweet spot for the president. It's, you know, it does happen. These caravans happen. The tough part is that our laws, the way they're set up, when it comes to Central Americans, is that we are built to accept them, as opposed to Mexican immigrants, where we can turn them around. We can, you know, turn them around to their country. The Central Americans and the families have to be absorbed. Almost 90% of them end up staying because of the way our laws are structured. And obviously they know that. So they come, they declare asylum on the border, and then it's a year-long process. And it ends up that most of them stay.
Yeah, do any of them show up for their court hearings, or do most of them just get in the country and then just stay here?
And then they assimilate. They kind of just get into the country that way. And now they know the process. So last night I had the Mexican ambassador to the U.S. on the show, and Mexico, he says, is stepping up and will prevent this caravan from getting to the U.S. border by granting them, if they ask for asylum, granting them asylum in Mexico and not in the U.S.
Right. And this is an interesting gesture, I guess, by the Mexican government, a new special relationship between the Mexican government and Trump after they inked that trade deal.
Yeah, and I think that that's the key thing. You know, they saw that this administration was playing hardball. They moved the ball on the NAFTA deal, which is now called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. And
USMCA.
And now I think they're it's a mouthful. But now they're helping on this, and I'd be surprised if that caravan makes it. But it is a political issue that Trump is happy with.
And again, if the families do make it to the border, will children be separated from their parents?
Well, a lot of these children come without their parents, but that's the question. You know, is zero tolerance going to go back into effect? The president was asked by Leslie Stahl about that, and he kind of he didn't fully answer, but I know it's being considered.
I wanted to get your take on the midterms, too. Karl Rove had a piece in The Wall Street Journal earlier this week talking about the GOP's October comeback. He said it's not just about Kavanaugh. The GOP position has improved as Republican voters are naturally rallying to their party. And it's really sort of a mixed bag if you're looking at the numbers and the head-to-head in competitive races. But even Larry Sabato has said so far that the Democrats are closing in on 23 to take the House, but they're not there yet. So this is not a fait accompli, and I wonder kind of what you're hearing from Republicans on the Hill about their optimism for November 6th.
It's turning. You know, it was kind of a lost cause for many weeks on the House side. Larry's right that Democrats are probably within 8, according to the polls, if you believe them, 8 seats away, but they're also hanging on to some seats that they could lose, you know, Democrats that could lose the seat to the Republicans. So, you know, you're looking at a House that's really close if you look at the numbers. And either way, it's going to be a slim majority, it looks like. On the Senate side, Republicans are poised to pick up 2, 3, maybe even 4 seats, which would be pretty significant in this current environment.
All right. He is Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. Chicago time during the week. The book, 3 Days in Moscow, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of the Soviet Empire. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
You too.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Nikki Haley's got jokes at the Al Smith dinner last night, but we got some jokes, too. We're working on branding Illinois politicians into our everyday lives.
Right.
Attaching their brand to everyday activities. So, for example, I think the leader in the clubhouse right now from our contributions has been I went to the Pritzker and I took a Madigan and then had to wipe. I dropped a Madigan and had to wipe my Colorton.
That's a good one.
That's pretty good.
So and this all started because we started calling Toilets and you decided, no, we should just call Toilets and say, can I use your Pritzker?
Kleenex is rebranding their man size product.
Tissues, yes.
Yeah, because that's, of course, sexist. And this
it's gender inequality.
Gender neutral world in which we live, communism. And so we're just applying it to our political overlords. Got some other submissions. We'll just keep them rolling all morning.
Okay, and we'll always take your calls. 312-642-5600.
I had to apply some Bob Creamer after getting kicked in the casting. That's not bad.
That is gross.
That's not bad. That's pretty good.
I
had to apply some Bob Creamer after getting kicked in the casting. All right, that's Bob Badgley. That's good. All right, that's a good one. Nikki Haley at the Al Smith dinner last night. She had some good ones, too. She's got some good joke writers, Nikki Haley does.
But I do understand why you invited me. 2 years ago, President Trump was here, and he made some waves with his remarks. Apparently, no one here could have predicted that. So last year...
Wait for it.
Last year, you went with Paul Ryan, who's a Boy Scout, and that's fine, but a little boring. So this year you wanted to spice things up again, right? I get it. You wanted an Indian woman, but Elizabeth Warren failed her DNA test.
There it is. So topical.
Actually, when the president found out that I was Indian American, he asked me if I was from the same tribe as Elizabeth Warren.
Now, she performed very well and was received well. The two Sandinistas who don't like each other, competing to be top Sandinista in New York, Andrew Cuomo, Bill de Blasio, they got booed.
Really? They should have been booed.
Yeah, they suck. That's why. Text from, let's see, we got some more submissions
here.
Text from 630. On my way out the door this morning, my wife told me to take out the Durbin. All right. Well, pretty good.
I still like Mike on the north side.
What?
He said his pension got dailied and his car got preckwinkled.
And his car got preckwinkled, yeah.
Because, you know, her campaign car, whatever that was, a car that drives her around somehow.
Stolen.
I don't know how that happened.
I signed my, let's see, another one, a text from 847. I signed my phone up for the Do Not Blagojevich, but they kept calling anyway.
Yeah,
not bad. I know that's, you know, sensitive subject for you since you're the president of the Free Blago fan club.
I am. Where is my Free Blago t-shirt?
Seeing if we got any.
Where's yours? Did you ever take one?
No. I'm retiring. Oh, this is a positive one from Mark the CPA. I'm retiring early thanks to my trumped up 401k.
Oh.
All right.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Making sure the politicians' names are used in everyday life.
I went to the Pritzker to drop a Madigan and then wiped my Colorton.
Yeah. That covers a lot of ground.
It sure does.
That covers a lot of Democrat polls. I like it.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Dan and Amy, and we spend a lot of time on this show talking about K through post-secondary education. Got our Campus Beat segment, try and keep you updated, make good decisions for your kids as it pertains to their education. Amy,
Dan.
Make sure Peyton and Eli stay on the straight and narrow. And so we like to update you as to the bad examples and the good examples and kind of like a complete picture. We talk a lot about leftism on campus, and so many op-eds now have been written in the last several months, starting with Andrew Sullivan's in New York Times Magazine. We're all on a college campus now these days. We talk about college professors and celebrate instances of, you know, wild conduct by college professors. What about university administrators? There's this piece by Samuel Abrams, who shockingly, is a political science professor at Sarah Lawrence College. That's the girls' college that Rom went to.
Right. Well, he's a dance major. A ballerina.
Yeah, he was. Right. Exactly.
Somebody's got to dance, Dan.
Samuel Abrams looked at the bureaucracy at universities. Focused so much on the professorate. What about the bureaucracies? He points out that schools are increasing their hiring in areas such as residential life and student centers, Office of Student Life and Success, Offices of Inclusion and Engagement, and so on and so forth. So he did a survey, nationally representative sample of roughly 900 student-facing administrators, those whose work concerns the quality and character of a student's experience on campus. He found liberal staff members outnumber their conservative counterparts by 12 to 1. 6% of campus administrators identify as conservative to some degree. 71% classify themselves as liberal or very liberal. And I guess this isn't a surprise. I mean, this is the ratio in a lot of academic departments and a lot of colleges as well. But he writes, it's no wonder so much of the non-academic programming on college campus is politically one-sided, just as is the coursework. For more on this topic, on the other side of the equation, really, Roger Rehm joins us. He's the president of the Fund for American Studies, which takes provides programming for college students as well as high school students in a range of disciplines, economics, journalism, and international studies. I actually, Amy, am a graduate of the Fund for American Studies program.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Did you bring some of your paperwork in?
No, I.
Do you have some of his work?
I brought Roger Rehm in.
We've got his file. Got his file.
Right.
So do you still have it?
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
Roger, thanks so much.
Of it?
Well, they've memorialized my time there.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm very prominent.
I've shadow boxed your work.
Mm-hmm. Roger, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk a little bit about the Fund for American Studies in a moment, but just want you to get your reaction to the continued scholarship in this space of what a college campus looks like these days, the professorate as well as the administrators.
Well, I'll give you one quick indication of how we notice this, because we recruit hundreds of students from around the country who go to lots of colleges and universities. They come to our program for a summer semester, and a few years ago we started noticing a difference in the students. It reflected what, you know, we're hearing this word coddled, that the students are mostly from these administrators, I think. They're told that they're fragile. They need to be protected from ideas they might not agree with or that might challenge them. And we were getting a lot of pushback from the things we teach about free enterprise, about our Constitution, from students.
Right.
And so we've had to undertake the last few years an orientation of sorts to impress on them the importance of the First Amendment, of free speech, the importance of being willing to hear ideas you might not agree with. And I do think, you cited those statistics from Professor Abrams, I think a lot of this is coming from the administrators, because even if 35 or 40 colleges have adopted the Chicago principles about free speech, it's the administrators who talk to students about this when they arrive on campus, who do the orientation for students and are responsible for implementing these ideas.
And it's interesting because the Fund for American Studies program, I should hasten to add, has students, I remember from going there, has students that are liberal too. It's not just for conservatives. So there is dialogue in the economics class that you take as part of, and then you do an internship in the D.C. area. But the economics class, I remember these dialogues with students who didn't agree with me, were not free enterprise oriented, were not originalists when it came to the Constitution. And so it really is an interesting mix of young people because, as you say, they're from all over the country, but they have a wide range of opinions on these topics.
Oh, yeah. I'd say the majority of our students come more from the center left, particularly true of those that attend our journalism program.
Yeah.
The business program may be a little bit the other way, but it's quite a range of views, which makes a healthy learning environment when you're in the dorms at night talking about what you've been learning in class, and you can have great debates and, you know, the bull sessions and challenge each other. And so we have to do extra steps at orientation to prepare students for that kind of dialogue to take place in the classroom and outside the classroom.
Does it just amaze you at what has happened? I mean, do you feel like your hands are tied?
Oh, our hands aren't quite tied because we can overcome it. I think, you know, what we notice, Amy, is that because they haven't really had much exposure to these ideas, that once you let them hear a little bit and you take a non-political approach to teaching these ideas as tools that can help them be better at analyzing issues, they're receptive. But it is amazing that, you know, they come to us the way they do so often.
Give us the backstory on the Fund for American Studies and more specifics on the programming that you guys provide.
Well, we were founded 50 years ago, and the vision is to bring students who we think are going to be leaders in the future, going into journalism, public policy, politics, and other fields like that, and give them the opportunity to spend a summer or a semester in the nation's capital. They'll go to the Congress, the White House, the Department of State and Defense, and learn about these institutions and what they do. They'll study in the classroom free market economics, learn about the Constitution, and they'll have internships for the length of the summer semester where they gain practical experience. And now we're proud that so many of our alums are our leaders. They've served in Congress. They're radio talk show hosts.
I mean, look at
in major markets.
We're with one right now.
Right, isn't that right. Boy? It's such a model.
Grace,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So how did you get involved, Dan? I mean, what?
I found out about the program because, you know, I read. I've been reading
that.
For some time.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting. The thing that most attracted to me was interesting because it was going to take a couple of courses during the summer at Georgetown where you could get credit for, number one. But it was more just take a couple courses, one in economics, one in international relations. And I knew of the economics professor that taught the course there, who's now since passed, unfortunately, George Vixnens, who was amazing. I mean, he's like a Friedmanite. And really colorful and fun and interesting. So that plus the internship piece of it was interesting to me. So I hadn't had any real exposure to D.C. when I was, I think I did this my sophomore year, after my sophomore year at Northwestern. Hadn't really had exposure. I thought, well, this is a cool way to do it. Take a couple classes, yeah. Live on the campus of Georgetown, so it's relatively affordable, and then be able to do an internship in D.C. And so I just think it brought, and then interact with
Where was your internship?
Young minds around the country. I did Legal Services Corporation, which provides funding for civil legal representation for indigent clients. Okay. So it was all right. It was fun. It was fun. It was a good part of the program. But the internship, that combination of the internship, the kind of professional experience plus the academic experience, I thought makes your program relatively unique.
Yeah, most of the students who come to our program come because of the internship. They're looking for a chance to gain experience. And we guarantee them an internship placement that hopefully is closely aligned with their major, their career interest. And the courses we require them to take are kind of the cost of coming. But we have outstanding professors. We've found others like Professor George Vixens who teach every summer. And the students rate the professors very highly. And we do a lot of pre- and post-testing of the students when they've gone through our program. And we found this summer 96% of the students said they learned a much better appreciation of the First Amendment than they had when they came.
Well,
over 90% showed they learned a lot more about economics than they had before. And we asked them when they arrive, only 20% of the students on the orientation day said they thought capitalism was superior to socialism.
Wow.
So that tells you, and it was up to like 70% when they left. So we didn't get them all,
but
at least they've been exposed to the ideas of that prosperity is tied to capitalism.
Doing the Lord's work. And also it shows that, right, somebody who's 20 years old who thinks Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is cool is not lost forever.
That's
right.
You
know, they just need a little exposure to other ideas, right, and to the evidence.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we were lucky. I had a tech whiz on my staff in the early 90s, and she grabbed the website dcinternships.org right when the internet was being developed. So a lot of students type in internships in their browser, and they come to our dcinternships.org website and find out about our programs.
Now, are you trying to get into the high school space as well in terms of enlisting students to have experiences like this?
Yeah, we just joined forces with another organization, the Foundation for Teaching Economics, FTE, and we do programs around the country on college campuses for high school students in the summer, a week-long Economics for Leaders program. We're doing training and curriculum for teachers, lessons for teachers of economics in the high schools, because I think you do have to start earlier to reach young people who don't have an appreciation for our free market economic system. And that's been great. We'll reach several thousand high school students directly, and then a lot more through the teachers we train. So we've got this continuum now of high school, college, and then programs for young professionals, journalism, fellowships, things like that.
And we get this question all the time because we talk about education and higher ed a lot on this show, which is, okay, you know, what are some schools that you would recommend my son or daughter consider? Because I do not recommend where I went, Northwestern, unless you want to be, you know, despised like I was on campus, which I enjoyed. It's fine, but it's a certain personality type that wants that experience. And also we've got Peyton and Eli, Amy's kids, and we're trying to prevent them from going down the dark path she went to, going to University of Iowa. We want them to go to an accredited college.
I got an A in basket weaving. And so, it was underwater basket weaving.
So, I mean, so how you know, and I'm sure you get that question all the time, too. So how do you tell people to conceive of making educational choices in conjunction with or for their kids?
Well, you have a lot of trade-offs you have to weigh in terms of what your son or daughter might want to study, engineering or liberal arts, and what size school is the right fit. You know, there are some great schools that offer a good education about our Constitution and the liberal arts, like Hillsdale College and Grove City College in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Mitch Daniels, the president of Purdue, has served on our board, and I think he's doing great things at Purdue University.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's requiring engineering students there to take liberal arts courses and learn something about the social sciences and humanities. So there are a lot of factors. You know, I sent two of my children to the University of Virginia, which I think always had a pretty good diversity on its faculty. You know, you always worry about the big publics, but there are a lot of things you should look at. But I would ask, when you go to visit a campus, I'd ask questions like, can you show me any evidence of what students learn in their 4 years here?
That's good.
And, you know, what about the intellectual diversity of your faculty? Most trustees don't even ask those questions at board meetings, and those are questions they should be asking to the faculty and the administrators of these universities.
That's good questions. The Fund for American Studies program, how does it work? Where do people get more information if college students that want to consider applying for the program?
Yeah, at dcinternships.org, you can find all the information for students who might want to attend or apply to our program. We offer a great number of scholarships. 80% of students get scholarships to attend. And then we have a website that's TFAS, our initials, TFAS.org, and that kind of presents the whole suite of programs that we offer for high school, college, and young professionals.
Great. He is Roger Ream. He's the president of the Fund for American Studies, TFAS.org, and
dcinternships.org. dcinternships.org. Is it too late for me to apply?
I think there should be, you know, like there's a...
you can have a grandma.
There's like a senior hall of fame, right? There's like, you know, you get like the people that were passed over the first time didn't, and then you can bring them in as seniors. So it's kind of the same thing for like graduates of University of Iowa in the late 60s.
Maybe we can give you an honorary diploma from our program.
There you go. All right, very good. Roger Ream, president of the Fund for American Studies, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy getting some reaction from our interview with Roger Ream, which was very good. I'm glad to expose people to the Fund for American Studies programs. Good stuff. Holly and Hudson, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, good morning. So I have this side hustle, coachmeintocollege.com, FYI, where I work with kids and parents are willing to spend anything to send their kids to a volleyball camp, a soccer camp, a swim camp. But I suggest, how about this summer between your junior and senior year, why don't you do an academic camp where you can really start exploring what you think you want to pursue in college? Mm-hmm. And so this last summer, I sent my youngest daughter to Washington, St. Louis for one of Mr. Ream's programs. It was called Economic History for Leaders. And so they studied how the U.S. pulled together currency after the Civil War, what happened during the New Deal, and it was riveting. She was not that excited to go, but she loved it. It was her favorite experience this past summer. So I really encourage parents to explore economic camps and sort of leave the soccer camps behind.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Getting back to our discussion about the midterms. Which races are you watching? Which races are you most motivated to vote in? Which races are you watching? Which races you're most excited to get out and vote in? 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro answer line 646-36DA. Turnkey.pro text line. I know the left is very excited about Beto O'Rourke. He's
tall Texan from El Paso, the congressman.
Yeah, he's sort of replaced Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as the it girl for this election cycle since she has a walk to that congressional seat. But I think I found a response, the it cultural Marxist hillbilly of this cycle. And it's this guy who was filmed pulling out and ripping up Ted Cruz signs in Texas. Ready for this guy?
Yeah.
I'm just going to take him down. If you live here, if it's your property, that's someone's home.
That is my property.
It is your property?
Yes. Okay.
That's your property too, though, huh?
That's my neighbor's property. He's a gun owner.
Oh, I'm a gun owner too.
I would watch. Be careful.
Oh, my God.
Taking out the signs.
If you guys shoot me over that, that would be great. That would be really, appropriate response. That would be
I have bought 100 of these. I'm about to put more out.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll feel better about them.
I hate that cruise.
Oh, my God. This is a horror film.
He's possessed. He needs to be exorcised.
What has got into
him? He turned
him?
Around because the guy was following him, filming him on his phone, and the guy turned around. This guy looks like, like a roadie for the Doobie Brothers and runs up to him and does that whole voice.
It's so creepy. Yeah. And I want to hear him make it stop. Stop.
Kill, please kill, stop. Kill.
No.
And then speaking of Ted Cruz. Yes. That guy hates, as you was forced to do the Walk of Atonement at an airport with a couple of women accosting him.
Oh, gosh. Let me hear this.
Ted Cruz at the airport.
It was a victory for women in America.
You think that putting a sexual assaulter on the court is a victory for women?
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
So you believe in men assaulting women. That's what your vote cost today, sir.
I believe in due process.
You believe in due process? Lots of women were out there talking about their stories. Do you believe in a man lying about his alcohol in front of the Senate and perjury? Do you believe in perjury?
Thank you for expressing your First Amendment rights.
So why do you support a man that abuses women? Shame on you, Ted Cruz.
God bless you, man.
Shame for shame.
Shame on you, Ted Cruz. Shame on you, Ted Cruz.
Again, this is why I want to change genders. When women like that start squawking off, I mean, shush your mouth.
Shame. Shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
And what's her name? One of the fungible women on CNN.
Which one?
Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, Brooke Baldwin, Allison Camerota. I can't distinguish them. They don't know where we get this term shame mob. Where does this term come from?
It comes from
women at the airport yelling shame at Ted Cruz, for example. Oh my goodness!
They're not doing any help for themselves or for their party. Speaking of parties, real quick, Cinnamon, Congresswoman Cinnamon, the first openly bisexual or
Are you saying Cinnamon or cinema?
Cinema.
Yeah.
They say Cinnamon. Yeah. Cinema.
Are you hungry?
No, I like cinnamon on my toast. But
okay.
Cinema was on a Phoenix radio station yesterday wearing a short length skirt, and she decided to throw her legs up on the console for a little bit so everybody could see her legs. It was wildly inappropriate.
And then she distanced herself from the Democratic Party.
So Representative Sinema, are you a Democrat?
I am.
Proud Democrat?
Oh my gosh, it's hard to say proud. I don't know that, I'm not sure that people are even proud of parties anymore, because I feel like the parties are not doing a good job.
Yeah.
So I would say that I'm a proud Arizonan. That's something I'm very proud of. And I'm proud of the work that I have done in Washington, D.C., and the work I've done in the state Senate and the state House before going to Congress. But I'm not particularly proud of the parties.
Hmm. Because, you know, in your ads, it mostly doesn't, well, actually, I don't think I've seen a D.
It doesn't.
Is that on purpose?
That's right.
Yeah. A good piece in the Washington Examiner, 7 things Democrats will do if they win back the House, just in terms of contemplating your vote for important congressional races in Illinois. Remember, Roskam, Hultgren, Bost, and to some extent Rodney Davis, Central Illinois, Mike Bost, Southern Illinois, obviously Roskam and Hultgren in the suburbs. The Dems need 2 to 3 pickups here. That's part of their math to get to 23. Illinois is absolutely part of their math to get to 23. So thinking about Roskam and Hultgren, particularly in the suburbs. 7 things Democrats will do if they win back the House. Caitlin Carell's piece in Washington Examiner. Investigate, investigate, investigate. You think you've been, and Republicans have been beset by silly investigations to this point. You ain't seen nothing yet if Pelosi's speaker. Gun control. Remember, you're seeing all the anti-NRA mail in these competitive races. They want to demagogue that issue and get every ounce of political benefit they can out of David Hogg and the Parkland student slash gun control activist. Pursuing Trump's tax returns and resuscitating that as an issue. Internet regulation. You know, folding in with or having the big social media companies fold in with them even more to censor conservative content. And immigration and border security, you can kiss those issues goodbye. So something
willing to give all that up?
A number of issues to think about as you contemplate your vote on November 6th. Ed in Oak Brook, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you know, one of the race I'm following, because I'm actually in that area, is the Roskam race and Kasten. That guy, the Kasten, is working really, really hard. I'm getting 2 or 3 pieces of mail a day from the guy, and he's tying, you know, Roskam to Trump, of course. But I don't care. I don't think Roskam's running a very good race, because all he's got to do is just say the lament, just or whatever you just said, Dan, about how, you know, all these Democrats, they're just going to vote down party line. They're not going to do anything for anyone here. It's just whatever Pelosi or Schumer wants, that's what they're going to get. And I think that's all Roskam really has to say. These negative ads that he's putting out, I think, are ineffective, and they're probably just making him look like a regular politician instead of the classy guy that he should be. Anyway, have a nice day.
Thanks for the call, Ed. In Kasten's district, Robert Badgley has a suggestion for you. Apply some Bob Creamer after you get kicked in the casting.
Oh.
I like that one. We're still taking your branding ideas. Again, the ruling class politicians in Illinois or elsewhere, how can we incorporate their names into our everyday life? Got a text from Tom. Just drop some Democrats off at the pool. Feel about 10 Pritzkers lighter.
Hey, that's actually, that's not bad.
Okay. Megan and then the South Side.
Hi, guys. I'm actually registered to vote in Indiana, and we are getting rid of Joe Donnelly and Pete Bisklosky this cycle. And I know this because for years, all of my neighbors, pretty much, I don't know, 75% of my neighbors would have these lawn signs out. I've only got 2 this time, so we're really hoping we're gonna get rid of those guys.
All right, yeah, the Joe Donnelly and Mike Braun race is a huge race. Thanks for the call, Megan. And I mean, I just don't understand the schizophrenia in some of these states. I mean, the idea of Scott Walker and Tammy Baldwin, the idea of, you know, the last 3 governors, Daniels, Pence, now Holcomb. Young in the Senate, and then you're going to stick with Joe Donnelly? Forget it. And you say, well, Joe Donnelly's not one of those Washington, D.C. Democrats. He's not one of those people screeching after ripping up Ted Cruz signs or yelling shame in airports or at the elevator in the Capitol building. Well, yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. It's the same thing I talk about, frankly, with Dan Lipinski in this in Chicago, in this state. Dan Lipinski, pro-lifers rallying to Dan Lipinski because he's personally pro-life. Yeah? I'm sorry, he's in the wrong party. That's his choice. Why you would spend a moment to try to rescue Dan Lipinski, who is part of what has become the most pro-abortion party in the history of the country, and there is no room for divergence of opinion. They tried to take out Dan Lipinski. He survived, thanks to pro-lifers. And then what do you got exactly? As opposed to focusing on improving the party that is predominantly pro-life? It just doesn't make any sense to me the way some people think. John in Evanston, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hey, John. John in Evanston. John in Evanston. Come
Hello?
In, John in Evanston.
There?
Yes.
Are you there?
Yes.
Yeah. Dan, are you there?
Yes.
I'm pulling for Joan Lassan.
All right. Huh? Joan Lassan running for Congress, running for state senate.
She's running against a potted plant named Laura Fine. And Laura Fine, that sweet young thing, is only interested in banning coal tar and bankrupting the state.
All right.
David versus Goliath.
As is everything on the North Shore these days. Thanks for the call, John. Joan Lassan, great candidate, running for the seat that was vacated by that Poindexter wannabe tough guy, Dan Biss. Mm-hmm. So she's running for the state senate seat. She previously ran against Calamity Jan Schakowsky, whose husband, as you know, is Creamy Bob.
Oh, come on.
Gary on 294.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Amy. Great show. My branding is the condition that you get when you open your property tax bill, the sickness, it leads to a condition called Pritzkeria.
Pritzkeria.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Thanks for the call, Gary. I believe they make some kind of...
Okay. Be nice.
Like a medical drink, like a Pepto-Bismol. What would be... So for Pritzkeria, you need... What do we need? Conservative. I think we gotta have to workshop that. All right, we'll workshop it.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
That's going to be like, I'm going to put that on my jack-o'-lantern this Halloween.
You know what? People are going to dress up like him for Halloween. I'm going to take a look at this guy.
Yeah, he's
what's his name?
He's costume worthy. You know, I don't know.
Ted Cruz sign stealer.
George and Moni, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, how about Rauner-osis? It's wherever your spine needs to be stiff, it collapses at the slightest pressure.
Oh, my God, Rauner-osis.
Yeah, a medical term. I like it. Thanks, George. Appreciate it.
Let's go. What happened. I got to... Got a slight Rauner-osis today.
What's wrong? You look like you're bent over. Rauner-osis.
Got it in the lower back area. Hurts. Hurts like a son of a gun. Oh my God! What am I gonna do?
What's that?
Yeah. This nutty guy that's tearing up the Senator Ted Cruz signs. People will dress like as him for Halloween.
It's costume worthy.
Wow, that's frightening.
Sorry, in Villa Park.
Oh, it's Sarai, not
oh,
sorry.
Sarai, sorry.
Cinema.
Sarai, sorry. Okay. Sorry, Sarai.
Hey, I was just mentioning, I've seen a lot of out-of-state cars here in the western burbs recently, mm-hmm. and I just wondered if anybody else has seen that.
Yes.
Because I'm just thinking that they're bringing people in from the outside to vote here.
Or it's relatives coming back to get the rest of their family and they're leaving. Could be one of
them. Oh, I hope so, because there was a lot of Florida cars, but I mean from states I have never seen.
Interesting.
I've seen Alaska lately, but it could be people renting cars.
Well, I don't know about that, but I mean it was just a thought.
It's interesting.
About a month and a half ago or so.
All right, thanks.
Florida,
thanks for the call, Sarai. I appreciate it.
Sure. In Florida, a lot of Illinoisans have second homes in Florida, and then they register their car in Florida because everything's cheaper.
Yeah, a lot of Illinoisans have second homes in Illinois because they're Florida residents now. That's what's actually happening. Perry and Niles.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. This is like how Pritzker is kind of a blob. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, all right, I'm hearing you. Well, you were looking for something for Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah.
How about, I can't believe I voted for the whole thing.
I can't believe I voted for the whole thing.
There you go.
All right.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks for the call. Perry. All right. I think
Scott liked that one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I still think the leader in the clubhouse is, I went to the Pritzker, dropped a Madigan, and had to wipe my Cullerton.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Don't miss David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. He's the, Conservative Party candidate for governor, State Senator Sam McCann, and he's been down in Southern Illinois, so the reception's been a little bit spotty, but I think we've got him now. Sam, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Thank you for having me. Dan and Amy, thank you.
So, is Jeannie Ives a conservative?
I don't know. You tell me. I guess you're assuming you're talking about the mailers.
The mailers didn't
accuse anyone of being a member of the Communist Party. It didn't accuse them of high crimes and misdemeanors. It didn't say anything about their character other than they supported Bruce Rauner. And I've said publicly over and over again, if any one of those folks would publicly disavow their allegiance to Bruce Rauner, I'll send a card into their district thanking them for their leadership. So that's all. It didn't call into question anything in their private or personal lives.
Well, I'm not saying it did. It's saying that the most conservative, the most principled conservative members of the General Assembly, as well as candidates, I start with Tom Morrison and Palatine, whose conservative credentials are beyond reproach by any reasonable measure. Give me an issue where he's taken the conservative position, where he has not taken the conservative position, for example. Give me a specific issue, and yet you call him a Rauner Rhino, and this is mail that's being paid for by the operating engineers. And I don't begrudge.
And Evan, you have a pretty cozy relationship with the operating
engineers. I know. If you let me finish, I will say so. I've known Jim Sweeney. I knew Bill Dugan before Jim Sweeney. I like the operating engineers fine. It doesn't mean that I agree with everything they do. And here's what they're doing. Here's what I suggest they're doing, and you respond to me.
So you wanted me to get on the phone so you could do a commercial for Tom Morrison?
No, yeah. I'm not doing a commercial. Well, you're doing mail for Tom Morrison. I do my own stuff as well. But I'm going to tell you what I think is happening, and you can respond. That's the point, to explain the decisions behind your mail pieces, and I'll give you all the time you want to explain. Here's what I think the operating engineers are doing through you. Madigan's bidding. They folded completely in with Madigan. And you're the conduit to help them take out suburban Republicans to make Madigan the speaker. So are you running for governor to make Madigan the speaker forever?
Have you ever heard of the law of conservation of energy? It's okay if you haven't. I remember, I'm a bit of a nerd, I'll admit it. I remember in great chemistry learning about that principle. And, you know, it says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only be transferred or transformed. And so this is what partisan politics has turned us into. You asked me to give you an example. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm letting you listen.
Yeah,
I'm letting you talk.
You
go ahead.
You asked me to give you an example. 4 years ago, I didn't support Rauner to begin with because Rauner is a pro-abortion, uber-liberal progressive. The only thing that appealed to the Republican Party and Bruce Rauner is his union-busting tendencies. And quite frankly, there's nothing in the Illinois Republican platform that even talks about organized labor, let alone busting them. So really, I don't even know why that appealed to people. But here, hear me out. Tom Morrison called me up and said, Sam, I just can't believe you're not supporting Rauner. We need this. We need this. We need this. And I've got video from 4 years ago when he was put on the spot. People said, why are you supporting Rauner after the primary? Well, I don't really want to, but we got to. Our evil is less evil than their evil. And you see, the law of conservation of energy says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It can only be transferred or transformed. And that's the energy that we have at the ballot box was created by the Constitution and endowed into each individual. And over the last 200 plus years, each individual has handed that to the party. It's kind of like a Bears-Packers rivalry. If you ask people why they hate each other, we don't even know. It's just because that's what we do. That's the problem. Tom Morrison helped Bruce Rauner get elected 4 years ago. He and I had text and phone conversations about this. Tom Morrison told me, he said, I'll be there to keep Bruce Rauner honest on these social issues over the next 4 years. He failed miserably. Now, I don't bring
And he also broke with Bruce Rauner when Bruce Rauner betrayed him and supported Jeannie Ives in the primary.
Is he and Jeannie still supporting Bruce Rauner? They are. They're voting for him. They're transferring their energy.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're transferring your energy to a Madigan supermajority. So what kind of sense does that make when you're running for governor and you're going after Republican state legislative candidates? You have limited energy to transfer.
We're going after Rhino. All they have to do is disavow themselves from Rauner, and I'll send a mailer into their district. I'll use that money to send mailers into their district thanking them for their leadership.
Yeah, but are you running for governor or not? You're running for governor and you're attacking Republican state representatives. Explain the politics of that.
I'm attacking, and here's the interesting thing, is they're taking money from the HRO, which takes money from 150. So, see, it's okay for your people, for the people you like and want to support.
Yeah,
it's okay
what,
for them.
No, it's not. It's not, Sam. It's not, Sam. Sam, that's a nice try, but here's the thing. I've already addressed that argument. That's not the issue at all. I know Dirk has taken $500,000 from operating in years 150. That's not the point. The point is that 150, despite Sam, if I'm going to let you finish, you're going to let me finish. Here's my point. My point is you're using the money, and 150 is using you to provide a supermajority for Mike Madigan, because that's 150's play in this election cycle. Their money to Republicans notwithstanding. That's what they're doing, and you're part of that.
Call out Rhino so that those Rhinos disavow themselves from Rauner, and when they disavow themselves from Rauner, then the base of conservatives will understand that Rauner has no path. I do have a path. Let me ask you something. Do you think Rauner has a legitimate path to victory in this race? If I got out today, could Bruce Rauner win?
No.
No.
No, thank you for being. I appreciate that. That's the honest truth, and I thank you. I applaud you for being honest.
Because I know the numbers. Yeah.
Right. But here's what could happen. We could have the Republican Party of today. You and I have very similar opinions on the Illinois Republican Party because it's a party of defeat, retreat, and repeat. Defeat, retreat, and repeat. That's all this party does. It wants to go for Democrat light. We have created in this four-way race the closest thing to an electoral college that the state of Illinois has ever seen or will ever see. This is an opportunity to get a downstate conservative, the first pro-life governor in the history of Illinois since Roe v. Wade. Even the Republicans who have been governors since Roe v. Wade have been pro-choice. We have an opportunity to affect a paradigm shift, because if I can get that base, that 30% who are supporting Rauner, the 5-10% who will support me, and 4-5% peeled off from Pritzker, who are moderate to conservative union members who are only voting for him because they're scared to death of Bruce Rauner. We have a path to victory. J.B. Pritzker hasn't broken 50% yet. J.B. Pritzker and Mike Madigan, you are right. Together, they will destroy this state, and that's what I'm trying to stop.
Well, I mean, with all due respect, I don't think you're going to win. I don't think Governor Rauner's going to win. So why would you try and destroy Tom Morrison? It just makes no sense. It's like we're eating our own. Why would you do this to your own party?
Just admitted that Rauner can't win. Oh, I'm not trying to destroy Tom Morrison. I'm trying to get Tom Morrison to be honest with his voters and with the rest of Illinois, and to be honest with himself, to confess to him, to look in the mirror right now, Tom, if you're listening to me, look in the mirror. Who do you stand with today? That's all you got to say. That's it.
Yeah. Here's the thing, Sam. I mean, if you want to see the likes of Tom Morrison or Peter Breen defeated, than your conservative party and your track into
I just told you I don't want to see them defeated. Well, I want to see them take a principled stand.
And you think by trying to get some conservatives peeled off, conservatives who don't know better, peeled off from them right now, 2 weeks before an election, is the way to do that?
No, I think getting them to take a public stand, if they will take the right stand and just, they don't even have to endorse me, just come out and publicly say that Bruce Rauner can't win the election and shouldn't win the election.
Well, they did that when they supported Jeannie Ives in the primary. That's the definition of saying
Bruce. That was the primary. That was 6 months ago.
Well, you just said Bruce Rauner shouldn't win the election by supporting a primary opponent against him. That's what they were saying, weren't they?
That's what they said 6 months ago. What do they say today?
Okay.
Tom Morrison's going to be in a walk for life tomorrow, but he's taking money and support from Bruce Rauner, and he's propped Bruce Rauner up for the first 4 years. Yes, he peeled off from him in the primary, and I give him credit for that. I applaud him for that. But without Tom Morrison's help and without a ton of so-called conservatives' help, Bruce Rauner would not be the governor today, and we would not have this infighting, and we would not have this mess, and we maybe could have a decent Republican nominee.
If we don't have people like Tom Morrison and Peter Breen and Mark Batnick and others in the General Assembly, we don't have to worry about infighting because we won't exist as a movement or a party.
All I've said is, why don't they just, all they got to do is get on social media, right? Call your number, get on social media and say, who do they support? Pro-abortion Rauner or pro-abortion Pritzker? Pro-transgender Rauner? Think about the commercial that you made for Jeannie Ives, that you and Jeannie Ives made, her introductory commercial.
Yeah.
Right? So we're saying that our evil is better than their evil.
I mean, to suggest...
That's why we keep getting our butts kicked. That's why we keep getting half victories in the General Assembly races and in these constitutional statewide races. Half victories with equal losses.
Look, I'm skipping the governor's race, okay, as I've said on this show.
You're not even going to vote for Sam?
I'm skipping the governor's race. But the idea that, like, real conservatives like Morrison and Breen and Batnick and many
real
others...
support progressive liberals like Rauner.
The fact that we would disagree on that relatively narrow decision suggests that I should excommunicate them from the party or the movement is absurd.
I didn't say that. That's not what the mailer said. That's not what I'm saying. I want them to take a stand. I want them to look themselves in the mirror and to look their voters in the eye and tell them who they support. Who do they support? It doesn't have to be me. I just want an honest answer. I think their voters would like to have an honest answer.
Yeah, I as far as I know, I don't know. I don't know that anybody's ducking that question. I think you've had people say, I'm not going to work for Bruce Rauner, but I'll vote for him because he's better than Pritzker or some facsimile of that. I don't think that's really a controversy.
And that message is why he's still polling at nearly 30%. That's the problem. They're transferring their energy to him, and he's taking that energy and to do evil with it.
So, Sam,
when you throw your lump of coal on the fire with the other lumps of coal, you are a part of the problem. What I'm asking for is for Tom Morrison and the other so-called conservatives, and I'll call them conservatives.
They are conservatives.
I'll give you the benefit of that. Okay. Well, then why don't they disavow them? Why don't they say they're not supporting Bruce Rauner? All they got to do is get on Facebook or Twitter right now and say, hey, I can't support this guy. He's not a real Republican. I can't do it.
Do you agree that conservatism is about issues, not about political races? So if there was a litmus test, it should be on the substance of the issues rather than a particular electoral contest?
It comes down in our government of the people, by the people, and for the people. You transfer your energy, which is power, to a group of elected officials. And see, this is the problem. People keep saying, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to vote. It doesn't matter. Or I'll just vote for the party person. Or I'll vote for whomever I saw last on the TV before I turned the lights out before I went to work this morning. That doesn't matter. Well, see, that distancing yourself from the moral imperative is why we're in the shape we're in.
Well, you know, Tom Morrison or others or me, I mean, we've gotten into this, Rob, before. We could say, look, I disagree with Sam when he voted with the Democrats to strip the governor of his collective bargaining rights with respect to the public sector unions. But now, that doesn't mean... Let me finish.
I already have that ability, and if he was negotiating with them, I wouldn't have taken... And I took that vote because my district reached out to me and asked me to, and there's nothing...
Well, that's fine.
Unconstitutional about it? Well, and we won the the Republican primary taking that vote.
I know. I understand all that. And my point is to say we disagree with that, and there's all these conservatives who disagreed with you on that vote. But that doesn't mean, and nobody did, that means Sam McCann should be excommunicated from the party or he can't call himself a conservative anymore. But we disagreed on that. So there was, if you want to, you know, provide a narrow litmus test and run around giving people litmus tests.
You call unborn babies, you call preborn human beings.
No, but all the people we're talking about are pro-life. All the people we're talking about that you're attacking are pro-life.
Help the guy get elected. If that was a Democrat who signed House Bill 40, can you only imagine the things they'd be saying?
The people you're attacking voted against HB 40 and left Runner in part over HB 40. I was working with Tom Morrison on Choose Life license plates 10 years before he was a member of the General Assembly, Sam.
Good for him. I'm happy for both of you, and I applaud you, and I thank you. Where does he stand today?
Yeah, I mean, it's just everything. It's just about you and your campaign.
Does he stand with Browner or not, Dan? What is so hard about that? Why is it such a hard thing?
Where does your conservative party go after November 6th? Because you're obviously not going to win. So where does this go?
Well, I don't know that you are necessarily a prophet. You may be a prof, and you may be operating a prophet. I don't think you're a prophet.
Well, I'm looking at the same numbers that tell me that Ronner can't win, which you agreed. So the same numbers say you can't win by about a factor of five over where Ronner stands right now. So
if you don't win,
where does the party go?
And throw that support our way, combined with the inroads we have with organized labor, the same inroads that you built over a career, we could win in a four-man race. The socially liberal progressive Democrats who don't want a tax increase, they're voting for Rauner, right? And he can keep those people. If I can get the conservative base combined with the people we already have, combined with a certain percentage of people who are moderate to conservative who are voting for J.B. Pritzker only because they are scared to death of Bruce Rauner because of what he's done to them over the last 4 years, we can piece together the 35% to 40% that could spell victory. Bruce Rauner has a 0% chance of winning. I have a chance.
Well,
we have a chance.
I know that's not what the numbers say, but you get the final word on that. Sam McCann, I do appreciate you coming on and holding court and answering for the mail. It's fine. It's your choice, and at least you were man enough to come forward and defend it and explain it. So I appreciate that, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
God bless you guys. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.